నమస్తే నాథ భగవన్ శివాయ గురు రూపిణే విద్యావతార సంసిద్ధ్యై స్వీకృత అనేక విగ్రహాయ నవాయనవ రూపాయ పరమార్థైక రూపిణే సర్వజ్ఞానతమోభేద భాన వేచద్గణాయతే స్వతంత్రాయ దయాకృప్త విగ్రహాయ శివాత్మనే పరతంత్రాయ భక్తానాం భవ్యానాం భవ్య రూపిణే వివేకినాం వివేకాయ విమర్శాయ విమర్శినాం ప్రకాశినాం ప్రకాశాయ జ్ఞానినాం జ్ఞాన రూపిణే పురస్తాత్పార్శ్వయో పృష్టే నమస్కుర్యానుపర్యత సదామచ్చిత్త రూపేణ విదేహి భవదాచనమిత్యేవమంచోకే సువీదేతమానస ప్రాత ప్రబోధ సమయే జపాసతి అసంభవేద శివాది గురుభ్యో నమః. ఓ మై ఇస్ ఆల్సో దేర్. సరే, ఆల్ ఆఫ్ యూ గో టు మ్యూట్. ఓకే, నౌ దట్ ఆల్ మేజర్ టాపిక్స్ దట్ ఐ వాంటెడ్ టు కవర్ were already handled, I wasn't sure what topic to take up next. I was debating if I should take up the second part of Varyoshya Ragasyam, or should I just come up with some other new topic or easier topic. I was talking to Gigi about it 2 weeks ago, I think, and she asked me to start a series on Sudha Samhita. Chidananda had asked all of his shishyas to read Sudha Samhita and Mahavakyartanavali at least once a year. Sudha Samhita has various sections and dimensions to it. The main areas of Sudha Samhita have already been covered in Purana Nagari. I think it's P3, the third year of Purana Nagari, I covered 12 issues of Sudha Samhita. If I have to give lectures on that, I would have to read them again deeply, and it would take some time. So that's without any clue on what to cover. I escaped to Grand Canyon last week. There I had full 3 days in such grand vastness to contemplate on absolutely nothing. So with the grace of Guru Mandalam, a wonderful topic got revealed in a much different dimension. So we have covered several dimensions of Vimarsha Shakti during the Varivasya Ragasyam. Arthamayi, Shabdamayi, Chakramayi, Dehamayi, Mantramayi, etc. We also then look into the Avastha Panchakam, Sunya Shatkam, and Sapta Vishuams, Chapakala aspects of this Vimarsha Shakti. But what came across my thought during this contemplation is, why did the great Bhaskaracharya miss out on the dimension of Gunas? Isn't that an important dimension in itself? Isn't Guna one of the key dimensions through which the great Shakti can be realized to help reach the state of Brahman? So this is when the grandness of this dimension started to unfold in the Grand Canyon. What an apt place for the Guru Mandalam to reveal its secrets. So the topic is going to be how the creation happened from a guna dimension. You will finally understand where I am going with this. Before I start, I definitely need to touch upon the Guru Padaka aspects. I have mentioned this numerous times already. Guru Padaka is like a capsule that contains the aspects of the Guru Tattva in the form of mantra. The key components of the Guru Padaka is the Mula Devata mantra itself, the Hamsa mantras, the Hamsa Shiva Soham, Soham Hamsa Sivaha, Hamsa Shiva Soham Hamsaha, Hamsa Soham. So those Hamsa contemplation mantras, Navanatha Bijam, which is Hasaksham Alavarayum, and then the Kechari Bijam, which is the Haska frame. Then you have the Ananda Bhairava and Ananda Bhairava Bijams, and then the Diksha Namas of the Gurus, and finally the respective responsibilities of the Gurus. What are the responsibility of the Guru? The Guru's responsibility, Swaguru's responsibility, is to assist the Shishya in proving what his true Swarupam is. Swarupa Nirupana Hetu. There ends the responsibility of the Guru. Paramaguru's responsibility is to make the Shishya understand how this pure bindu, that one dot, the prakasha aspect of the Brahman, has expanded into this big universe through its vimarsha shakti. So that is the swachha prakasha vimarsha hetu. The Parameshti Guru's responsibility is to make you realize that the bondages of ajnana and become free, meaning grant you the moksham. So the biggest responsibility lies with the Parameshti Guru. So why am I bringing this Guru Padaka here? The Varivasya Ragasya mostly revolved around the Prakasha and Vimarsa aspect of the Brahman. So it deals with how this great Vimarsha Shakti has expanded into this vast universe through various dimensions, and how that one small Bindu dot has become infinite. Most importantly, when you have such infinite vastness, it is natural for us to struggle on where to start, isn't it? So to help us get out of that problem, Varivasya Rahasyam explained the various different Vimarsha dimensions and then laid out the path to the Sishyas to at least catch hold of any one of those dimensions to get back to the Bindu state. Whose responsibility is this Prakasha Vimarsha aspects? It is the Paramaguru's areas. So when I was explaining the Varivasya Rahasyam to you, or whatever I'm going to explain to you today, understand that the mouth and the body are mine. But it is truly my guru and Gigi revealing these secrets to all of you out of their own Avyaja Karuna. With this introduction, let us now jump into the Gunamayi dimension of the Vimarsha Shakti. Okay, so we all know by now that the Brahman in its pure Bindu state is just pure light, nothing else. There is absolutely nothing that it wants, absolutely nothing that it does, there is absolutely nothing that it cares also. So at this state, there is just that and nothing else. For something to exist, this pure light, this Prakasha Bindu has to manifest. This manifestation is called the Vimarsha or expansion. Where is this Vimarsham? It is also within this Prakasham only. So this Shakti is also within this Brahman only. Without this Shakti, the Brahman won't have the mere will to procreate. So this Shakti is the key component of all that exists. Without this Shakti, we do not exist. This universe and everything that we see, feel, eat, drink, breathe, etc. cannot exist. So it is only because of her we exist. And it is only through her we can also reach her. So this Vimarsha Shakti is the only way for us, whether you use the Bhakti Margam, Jnana Margam, Kriya Margam, Yoga Margam, X Margam, Y Margam, doesn't matter. Even the basic instinct of to even think of a Margam is her only. Jnana is her. Bhakti or emotion is her, yogam or energy is her, everything. So it's all her only. So they all are her various dimensions. So we can only catch hold of one or more of her dimensions to reach her. This is why Saundarya Lahari claims in its first line itself, Shivasaktya Yukto Yadi Bhavati Shakta Prabhavitam, the same concept. Without her, it is virtually impossible for anyone to do anything. So just like the dimension of Arthas, which is the Bhutas, Shabda, Deha, Chakra, Mantra, etc., Guna is also a key dimension. Just like the five basic elements, Guna is also atomic element there. So just like how the elements by themselves cannot do anything, but only by Panchikaranam, creation and other useful things happens, Gunas by themselves are static. But only by their mixture, creations happen. Just like the fact that the Bhutas themselves sprung out of the Akasha as the primary Bhuta, Gunas themselves sprung out of the Sattva as the primary Guna. Remember, Gunas are independent atomic dimensions. I'm simply using the Bhutas here as a relative Tattva so that it is easier for you to contemplate. At the state of the Prakasha Bindu, do these Gunas exist or not? In all our Namas, when the Devata Namas, Sagastra Namas and all those things, we find a Nama which is very common to several primal Devatas, which is Nirguna, okay, without any Guna. That is the meaning of that Nama, okay. So does that mean the Brahman has no Gunas, or does it mean that the Brahman has all the Gunas, but in a dormant state? Right, so that point has to be contemplated. Hold on one second. So does that mean if the Brahman has no Gunas, or Brahman has all the Gunas but in a dormant state? Do you see the difference here? If I have a SIM card in my cell phone, but the connection has not been activated, I do not have any signals and I'm unreachable. But that does not mean that I do not have a SIM card, isn't it? It is simply in an inactivated state, that's all. So the name Nirguna need not mean that I do not have any Gunas. It can also mean none of the Gunas are active. Why am I trying to make this point? It is very subtle. It is like the Sadashiva state where the creation is within the creator, but the creation actually does not exist. So there is no Srishti, but there is also Srishti. It is like that subtle line that I am dwelling upon. So the Prakasha Bindu, which also contains the SIM card in it, but in a dormant state, is the Brahman. The SIM card within is the Vimarsha Shakti. In our Laukika state, there should be some phone company that is needed to activate the SIM card, right? So, but in the Prakasha state, who would activate the SIM card? It is self-activated. Who is that self? Is it the Prakasha aspect? No, it is the Prakasha aspect does not do anything. To activate that itself, you need this Vimarsha Shakti only. So the Vimarsha Shakti herself gets bored in the state of stillness for a long time and decides to self-activate its SIM card. This self-activation is called the initial spandanam. Now, once it self-activates, the SIM card is active, meaning Vimarsha Shakti is active. If that is active, it cannot sit idle anymore. It starts to engage itself in numerous dimensions to become more, that is to expand, to spread, to enhance, to manifest. All these sthula, sukshma, karana aspects are still within, but they are there. It is very important that you understand this point. At this stage also, the sthula, sukshma, karana aspects of this Vimarsha Shakti exists within that Prakasha Bindu only. But it is still within this Bindu. From this point onwards, I'm going to separate the Vimarsha Shakti, which is also a Bindu, and then dwell upon it. Why? The Prakasha Bindu always will be and only Bindu and cannot change. It will remain as a Bindu only. It is a Vimarsha Bindu that is the key for us to contemplate upon. It is a Vimarsha Bindu that is going to expand and make us relate with the Jagat. So you'll have to hold on to this Vimarsha Bindu tightly. So this Vimarsha Bindu at this Bindu state is the root, Moolam or Adi, whatever you call. She is the self-activated SIM card. How can she have a sthula representation at this Moola Bindu state? Within her, she has the will to perform Panchakritya, Srishti, Sthiti, Samhara, Tirodhana, Anugraha, how to create Lingam and Yoni, how to establish the path Nagam. So all these aspects put together has to be, there has to be a sthula form of this Moola Adi Shakti, this Vimarsha Shakti at first expanded herself by covering the vast space using her own tejas. That's what she did first. So this whole, once she got activated, using her own tejas or light, she just expanded this whole jagat. Okay, so this Vimarsha Bindu at this Bindu state is the root. Now this Adi Shakti, if you consider itself as the Bindu, there must be other aspects of the Shakti that are needed for manifestation. Since we are now only contemplating on the Guna dimension of the manifestation, there has to be Sattva, Raja, and Tamoguna aspects. Remember, I'm not talking about the equilibrium state. If these three gunas are in the equilibrium state, then it is called the Prakriti. We are not even talking about creation yet. I'm only talking about the seed state. In this Vimarsha Bindu itself, there has to be the seed for these gunas also. Are you all with me so far? Because there is a very important point to remember, because this is not, I'm not talking about equilibrium, I'm not talking about 33.3% here. I'm only talking about the seed for those gunas also existing in that Bindu itself. Let us now look into the Tamo aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu. This Tamo aspect can also be looked at into Sthula, Sukshma and Karana aspects, isn't it? After all, we are still looking at it at the Bindu state only and picking one dimension of that and getting deeper and deeper into it. This Tamo aspect of this Bindu is needed for the Jatavastu's manifestation. These mountains, whatever, anything that is non-living, those Jatavastu's, that the manifestation of that can be done by the Tamo aspect of the Bindu. In this Tamo aspect, we have Jatavastu's laziness, fear as a factor, ignorance, inactions, etc. So if we have to represent this Tamo aspect in a Sula form, these should be taken into consideration. Let us now look into the Sattva aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu. This is needed for the wisdom and also the most important thing, intuitive ways to get back to the root. So it can be done through mantramayi, shabdamayi, shrutimayi, learning, and also to cut through the bottlenecks that can happen. This Sattva aspect are the inherent ways that are always present and anadi also. So if we have to represent this Sattva aspect in a sthula form, these variables should be taken into consideration. So the tamo aspect is needed to manifest the jata vastus, and sattu aspects are needed to manifest the jnana vastus. Then comes the main rajo aspect. The rajo aspect again can have sthula, sukshma and karana layers. The rajo aspect is needed for the sustenance of the jagat. The inherent desire to procreate, live, enjoy, survive, relate, sorrows to overcome, diseases to defeat, pride, ego, anger, etc., 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 are all various rajoguna aspects that have to be represented in this sthula form, isn't it? The same, using the same variables that we are talking about with the rajoguna. We are still talking about the vimarsa bindu only. No manifestation has happened so far. Everything is still in the root state. It is very difficult. It's becoming very difficult for me to refer to these various aspects as Vimarsha Bindu, Adi, Mola Bindu, and then the Tamo aspect of this Mola Bindu, Rajo aspect of this Mola Bindu, Sattva aspect of Mola Bindu, etc. So for easier understanding and for reference purposes, let us start to name these forms. Okay, just for our own purposes. They really don't have any forms at this state. They are still a Bindu. They are still at the macro atomic level. I can easily name them as root, T, R, and S. Okay, so it's easy. So T represents tamo, R represents rajo, and S represents sattva, and root as root. But since the Tantra Sastras did not have such abbreviations at that time, they have given lengthier names. So let's look into those names. The Mula Vimarsha Bindu, which is none other than Brahma Vastu itself, is called Adi. They like to call anything great, good, prosperity, anandam as Lakshmi. So for us, we have a problem with the word Lakshmi. Because the moment we hear Lakshmi, we think it is Vishnu's wife. That's not true. Lakshmi is the name for all devis, similar to Sundari. Is there a devata who is not a Sundari? Tell me. So that Sundari is a common name for any devata. So first we have to learn to unlearn all that we have learned through the stories and Puranas and relate with tattvas. When I say Adi, Adi Lakshmi or Adi Mahalakshmi, I simply refer to the root Vimarsha Bindu, which is nothing but the Brahma Vastu herself, period. Okay. At this state, there is no Shiva, no Vishnu, no Brahma or anyone. No creation has started. So there is nothing to sustain or destroy. So this Vimarsha Bindu has nothing to do with the wife of Vishnu. Clear? So the Tamo aspect of this Vimarsha Bindu could have been easily named Tamo Lakshmi. Instead, Tantra Shastras named her differently. They called her Mahamaya. Okay, so the sattva aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu also came with a different name. They wanted to name Maha for everything. So Mahamaya for tamo aspect, Mahavidya for sattva aspect. The rajo aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu, at least that they could have named Rajo Lakshmi. They didn't. They named it again as Mahalakshmi. Anyway, so they desperately wanted to confuse people. So That's the way it is. So Adi Lakshmi, Mahamaya for Tamo Guna, Rajo Guna as Mahalakshmi, and Sattva Guna as Mahavidya. So now you see the hierarchy forming, slowly forming. In the root, we have the Brahman. The Vimarsha Bindu of this Brahma Vastu is the Adi Mahalakshmi. Tamo aspect is Mahamaya, Sattva aspect is Mahavidya, and Rajo aspect is Mahalakshmi. Now we talked about the sthula forms of these various aspects. It is very, very interesting. There is absolutely no creation at this stage. It is like Mahasodashakshari. Since she is in the Sarvanandamaya Chakram and in the Bindu state only, the Prakasha Bindu being Kameshwara, Vimarsha Bindu being Kameshwari, but we still have the Sula forms given to her, isn't it? That is exactly the same concept. It is the same Vimarsha Bindu that we are looking at. Instead of Mahasodashakshari, we are calling her Adi Lakshmi. She has a different Sula representation. She has four hands. On one hand, she carries pomegranate. On another hand, she carries gada. On the third hand, she carries a shield, khedayam. On the fourth hand, she carries a panapatram. On her murdhani, on the head, she sports a yoni, lingam, and nagam. This is the form of Adi Mahalakshmi. There is another name for her, Mahachandika. That's the name. Let us now look at why these weapons and what is this yoni, lingam, nagam, etc. Okay, let's look into that. The four weapons are Panapatram, Khetayam, Gada, and Matulingam. Matulingam is pomegranate. What do these represent? Several Tantra Sastras provide different meanings for these. Renuka Mahatmyam gives Shakti representations to these. Matulingam is Icha Shakti, Gada is Kriya Shakti, Ketayam is Jnana Shakti, and Panapatram is the combination of all three representing Shuddha Anandam. There is also Purusharta representation for this. Matulingam represents the Kama, Gada represents the Dharmam, Ketayam represents the Artham, Panapatram represents the Anandam, as representing Moksham. So Dharma Artha Kama Moksham, Purusharta representation. So for several years, I have not been convinced, satisfied with these representation of Adi Lakshmi, because when she is nothing but the Brahma Vastu and responsible for the initial Spandana itself, representing her with Purusharthaam and Sakti representation was not convincing enough to me. So I have contemplated on this for several years to understand why such a Moolabindu had to be represented with such a sthula form, and which could be, and what could be the actual representation. When Tantra Sastras fail to convince you, what other option do you have other than holding the feet of the Guru Mandalam tightly? That's the only thing I was doing. And by the grace of Guru Mandalam, here is the answer that got revealed to me. So I'm sharing it with you. So the whole form is the Adi. The whole form that I represented, right? That is the Adi. She represents the energy prior to the Prakasha Bindu itself. This is another thing that we have to be very careful to understand. So Prakasha Bindu, I'm talking about Vimarsha Bindu, is part of the Prakasha Bindu, is within the Prakasha Bindu itself. But here I am also saying, it is, she represents the energy prior to the Prakasha Bindu itself and resides within it. How can we relate with this? So there has to be something relative, right? So we can understand this concept. Let's say, for example, we see Agni. Within Agni, there is a Shakti of Agni. So when we see the form of Agni and the Shakti power of Agni, which are inseparable within the Agni itself. So we see Agni and the Agni Shakti also within Agni, and they are not separable. So that we understand. The Prakasha Vimarsha Bindu together, that we can understand. There was no Agni form prior to the creation of Agni. But can you claim that there was no Agni Shakti prior to the creation of Agni? You see the difference, subtle difference? No, isn't it? So without the Agni Shakti, Agni could not have been created. So the Agni Shakti, even though is within Agni, has to be outside of it for that to be created. Similarly, the Vimarsha Bindu, which is the Karana for all of these things, all this creation is inherently residing within the Prakasha Bindu, is also responsible for the creation of the Brahma Vastu itself. In geometry, if we can find the measurement of one angle, the measurement of the opposite side is automatic and already measured. This is similar to that. Because this Prakasha Vimarsha Bindu is within, the Prakasha Bindu by itself is not doing anything. So for that to be formed, the same Shakti had to be available prior to that. So we now know that she is the primordial power, Adi, Moolam, Parashambhavi, which is apart from all these things and within all of these. So she is the representation of the Prakasha Bindu and also the Vimarsha Bindu, Shiva and Shakti. Now the mere fact that we are able to separate out the Vimarsha Bindu and contemplate on that indicates that the initial Spandana has happened. At this state, we know that the will to create has happened, which is the Vimarsha Bindu Icha. In addition to that, the Jnana on what to create has also happened, which is the Sadashiva state. The fact that she sports the Matulingam with innumerable seeds within indicates the creation separately, because that is separately in her hand, but still with her, represents the Ishvara state. This understanding of these Shuddha Tattvas of Shiva, Shakti, Sadashiva and Ishvara is the Shuddha Vidya state, which is represented by the Mahavidya, which is the Sattva Guna aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu, okay, which is a part of her also. So next comes the Shuddha Asuddha state of Maya Tattvam. Maya herself is represented by Mahamaya, which is the Tamoguna representation of Vimarsha Bindu. So Kala, Avidya, Raga, Kala, Niti are represented by the Mahalakshmi, Rajoguna aspect of the Vimarsha Bindu. Then come Purusha, this is represented by the Lingam, and then she sports, that is sported on her head, and then Prakriti, which is represented by the Yoni, and the Nagam represents the actual Bhogam, the manifestation of creation of all these Bhutas, Tanmatras, Indriyas, and Antakaranas. So, all these tattvas are there. You can think of this as Adam and Eve and snake story also as well, because that is the lingam, prakriti, yoni, and the nagam in on her head. Adam being the purusha, Eve as prakriti, and snake as a snake. However you want to relate and kind of figure it out, figure it out. But I just covered all the 36 tattvas and also beyond that. Okay, so she is tattvamayi and tattvatitamayi. Now, she created this entire jagat out of her own spandana. Fine. But she also have to make the jivas understand that and make them get back to the root state, isn't it? That is also her responsibility only. The mere mortals cannot relate with these jnana that easily. So this is where the panapatram comes into play. Jivas need a carrot to perform anything. Is that a problem of the jivas? No. It is how she created the jagat, her own niyati. Without the icha for the reproduction and attachment and ignorance, this jagat would not function, isn't it? When Brahma created his first four sons and they started to hear the jnana adhara dvani from Dakshinamurti, they shunned the jagat and sat under the Adiguru, consuming the Shabda Brahma Tattvam itself. So if everyone becomes like Sanakadi Rishis, then how can this jagat function? So it is her own leela that is forcing us to play this role. But at the same time, she has to show us the way to get out of this as well. So this way must also use the same faculties that is forcing the jivas to dwell in this universe. That same faculties that forces us to remain here must be used to get out of here as well. So that same icha on bhoga things, anitya things, must be used to gain the icha on the nitya ananda vastu. Fine. How do I differentiate between the nitya vastu and the anitya vastu? I need to have the vivekam, that discriminative power to discard the unreal. That discriminative power, that vivekam is represented by the gada to establish the truth, sat. That power to shield us from the unwanted pulls and attractions that are constantly thrown at us. That vairagya buddhi, that chintana, that makes us walk the path without unwavering mind, without any wavering mind. That chit is represented by the ketayam, the shield. If we can do this, then shamadhi shatkam and mumukshutvam automatically follows and results in the panapatram, which is anandam, this sachitanandam, brahma vastu, and also the ways to reach her, brahma vastu, are represented by these weapons. Okay, so we looked at the whole form and the weapons also. There is another dimension to these weapons. Matulingam represents the srishti sakti, shield represents the sthiti sakti, gada represents the samhara sakti, Mahamaya and Mahavidya, where they are not apparently visible, that is the Tirodhana Sakti. Then the Panapatram represents the Anugraha Sakti. So she is the Panchakrita Prayana Adi Shakti. I'm sure by now you all would have understood who this Adi Mahalakshmi is. She is the prime goddess of Devi Mahatmyam. She is represented in only one place in India, Kolhapur Mahalakshmi. She has four hands, Panapatram, Gada, Ketayam, and Matulingam. She also has the Lingam, Yoni, and Nagam in her head. So have we covered all the tattvas and also beyond the tattvas? So she is the tattvamayi, tattva atitamayi. So can we see her as a total representation of everything that moves on, that moves and does not move, jatavastu and jivavastu, anda charachara, characharamayi. She is the great light, jyotirmayi. She is the mahavidya, vangmayi. She is anandamayi. She is spotless, niranjanamayi. She is pure consciousness, chinmayi, paratvaramayi, shrimayi, sarva aishwaryamayi. Shabda Brahmamayi, Characharamayi, Jyotirmayi, Vangmayi, Nityanandamayi, Niranjanamayi, Tattvamayi, Chinmayi, Tattvatitamayi, Paratparamayi, Mayamayi, Shrimayi, Sarvaishwaryamayi, Sadashivamayi, Mampahi, Chamundike. With this, we end today's session. In the next session, we will look into Mahamaya, Mahavidya, and Mahalakshmi, how they are split to form guna mixtures. Until then, contemplate on this great Adi Lakshmi, Chandika Parameshwari, Aim Hrim Klim, Chamundayi Vichay, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Namaskaram Guruji.
Namaskaram Guru.
Namaskaram Guru. Super.
Namaskaram Guruji. Namaskaram, Guruji.